Welcome to Quinn's Empowerment Hour on the BBS Radio Network, hosted by Quinn Lay Erickson, psychotherapist, life coach, and inspirational speaker. Quinn's experience as a blind woman, a boat person from Vietnam, and a refugee has driven her to realize her dream to help you to become the best that you can be. So join Quinn every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, for an hour of insight and inspiration for your heart, your spirit, and your soul. Good evening. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour with Quinn Lay Erickson. Thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight, I'd like to talk with you about change. What might be some of the factors that can help us make change and help us to motivate people around us to make change? So specifically, I'll talk about the stages of change, and we can use this as a guideline to apply to all kinds of changes in our lives, different aspects, whether it be health, such as alcohol use or smoking or exercise, to emotional well-being, such as doing things to alleviate our anxiety or depression, to relationship issues, such as, you know, conflict or how to talk to other people. So basically, you can use your understanding of these stages to gauge where you are in your motivation, in your progress to making the change, and where someone in your life is in their motivation to make the change in their lives. So the stages of change, specifically, they are pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, maintenance, and relapse. Let me quickly tell you what those stages, and then I will explain more specifically what they might look like. So pre-contemplation is when you're not aware of the problem, or when the person doesn't see what's happening is a problem. Contemplation is when they start to consider what's happening is a problem in their lives. And then preparation, they prepare to make the change. And action, they are doing things to make the change. Maintenance, they continue to do things to make the change. They continue to do things to keep the change. And then relapse. Relapse is going back to the old ways. So such as relapse in terms of alcohol. They used to stop using alcohol, but then they go back to using drugs and alcohol. Or they used to quit smoking for quite some time, and then they go back and they smoke again. So basically, those are the stages. So let me talk to you about each of the stages and how we can help ourselves or help other people. Well, not, you know, we can't control other people to make changes, but there are things that you can do to encourage, to motivate people to make changes. So the first stage is pre-contemplation. So when a person is in this stage, they don't see what's happening is a problem. They don't see a particular behavior is a problem. So for example, a person who drinks or uses drugs, he doesn't see that it's a problem. Or a woman who is in an abusive relationship, she doesn't define that as abuse. A child who doesn't like to play some sport or do any sport, and he doesn't see that as a problem. Or a girl who might be very sexual, maybe sleeps with a lot of boys, and she doesn't see that as a problem. So some people see this as denial. Other people see this as that they're not seeing that it's a problem. Also, another thing too is sometimes they have this intellectual awareness that it is a problem, but they might not have the emotional awareness or the emotional motivation to see that it's a problem and to do something about it. One of the things that can help a person to make positive changes is to ask himself, the way things are right now, is it really working out for me? And this requires a person to be honest with himself, right? So say, for example, growing up as a person without sight, My parents and my family did all kinds of things for me, right? They took care of me, they cooked for me, they everywhere I went, they would guide me outside, they would do things for me around the house. And so growing up, I saw that it's normal because that's how they loved me. But then at some point when I was about 16 or so, I asked myself, is this how I would like to see myself in 10 years or in the rest of my life, right? So kind of asking yourself honestly. So in some ways, this current behavior has served you in some ways. Obviously it does, otherwise you wouldn't do it. But what might be other ways that is not serving you? What might be other ways that is not allowing you to the best to be the best that you can be? What might be other ways that you feel either helpless, depressed, anxious, unhappy, unfulfilled about it? So asking yourself honestly, is this really working out for me? Or even ask yourself, what is it like for me to no longer maintain this behavior? So kind of imagine yourself, what is it like to be free of this behavior? If someone in your life does some unhealthy behaviors and you really like him or her to change, a few things you can do. First of all, I know that often you feel very invested in helping this person to change. You feel very upset. You feel helpless. You might feel frustrated, right? And so you have maybe at this point, because the other person doesn't see what he does is a problem, and you do. So really at this point, you have a lot of incentive for the person to change. And so what I'm inviting you to do is to step back, because the more you want the other person to change and convince that what they're doing is a problem, the more that person going to resist you, going to convince you that it's not a problem. And so one first step is to step back, because by stepping back, that's when you giving it space for the other person to change. So stepping back. And another thing you could do is ask open-ended questions. So ask things like, how is this behavior really working out for you? What do you think it's like when you no longer do this? Right? So ask open-ended questions so that it encourages the other person to start to see that what he or she is doing is a problem. Another thing is, instead of say you do this, you do that, you, it might be sharing with the person your experience when the person engages in the problem behavior. So using I statement, I feel X when you do Y, and be sincere about it. So, you know, when you smoke around me, it really bothers me because it really affects my breathing. It really makes me feel suffocated. When you don't call me and tell me that you are going late, it makes me feel disrespected. Or I feel very upset when I see you being mean to the kids. Or I feel very uncomfortable the way you often talk to me. And so using I statements rather than you statement, often we would say, you're very critical towards the kids. It's a problem. Or you are very aggressive. I hate the way you smoke. You know, you smoke and your cigarette all over the place, and it's just so smelly and it's just so disgusting. I don't like it at all. So often we use a lot of you statement, right? Even though we use I don't like it, I hate it. And yet it comes across as critical. And so when you are critical, the other person becomes defensive. And so rather than seeing the behavior as a problem, the person sees that you are the problem, or your perception is the problem. And so a few things. So for the person who doesn't see things as a problem, ask yourself, is this really working out for me? What is it like for me to be free of this behavior? What is it like for me to make the changes? Right? So ask yourself, be honest with yourself. For Other people who like the person to make the change might be asking open-ended questions, taking a step back, and sharing your experience using I statements rather than being critical using you statements. The next stage is the contemplation stage. In this stage, the person starts to become aware of the problem. They start to consider that what's happening is a problem. However, they're not ready to do anything about it yet, right? And this stage can be one of the longest stage, because you often would see a woman would be stuck in an abusive relationship for a very long time, and she is unable to make the changes for all kinds of reasons. Maybe because they don't want to break up the marriage for the children's sake. Maybe she's scared to move out of the house, out of the relationship. Maybe she's not confident enough. For a person who uses drugs or alcohol or drinks, he doesn't see that he's able to make the changes. He also can find all kinds of reasons why he would continue to drink. Well, you know, it helps me to relax. It serves as an escape. It helps me to not feel the pain, to be numb. For people who use drugs, it helps me to have a high, because other things in life is just so hopeless or so sad that using drugs is the only time that I can get the high, right? For people who smoke, they can see that it's a problem. They hear about all kinds of negative information about smoking and the negative impact on the health and on other people's health, but they see that it really helps them relax, it's a source of rewards for them, it's enjoyment for them, so they don't see that it's worthwhile to make the change, and they see that they're not confident being able to make the change. And for people around them, it can be extremely frustrating witnessing the person in this stage for a long time, because it can have a negative impact on the people around them as well. So for example, a wife, the way she talks is very problematic, how she pushes, how she controls, and so her husband might impact him a lot. It might make him feel depressed and sad, and so again, the people around often have much more incentive, much more invested for the person with the problem to make the changes. And so if you find yourself in the contemplation stage and you are engaging in certain problematic behaviors, again, it might be asking yourself, what is it like for me to make the changes? What is stopping me to make the changes? So acknowledge your fears, your doubts. Often we're so good at convincing ourselves that these fears are real, that we're not able to make the changes. And also another thing is, so when you first become aware of the problem, feelings like shame, guilt, initially those feelings and embarrassment, initially those feelings, sometimes even anger, those feelings can help you be aware of the problem. Right. So say, for example, if a child who has been verbally abused by his parents, right? So first, when he first become aware of it, it makes him angry to realize that, yeah, my parents have no right to talk to me like that, right? So, or a person who drinks, when he first becomes aware of the problems, he feels guilty, he feels ashamed for not being there for his kids, for not being there for his wife, his partner, his family. They might feel ashamed for not being able to do the job and losing the jobs perhaps, right? So having those negative feelings in the beginning can help them move from pre-contemplation stage to contemplation stage, can help them become aware that what they're doing is a problem. However, prolonged anger, shame, guilt, helplessness, those things, those prolonged negative feelings often do not help us to motivate us to make the positive changes. So if you find yourself hanging on to those feelings, find ways to let them go. Find ways to forgive yourself, to be compassionate towards yourself, to realize that you need to let these feelings go. Because the more you hang on to them, the more you're stuck where you are. And you, the only way you can begin to heal and be the best that you can be, or even to make amends to people that you have hurt, the only way you can do that is by letting go of those feelings of guilt, shame, and anger. Because when we have those feelings, we are very stressed. And when you're stressed, you're not able to, you are all constantly in the survivor mode. And you're not able to get in touch with your creativity. You're not able to get in touch with your motivation, your optimism, your ability to access the inner resources that you have, the inner strength that you have. And so for people, for say family members or loved ones, if you notice that your loved one is in the contemplation stage, you know, often the temptation is to guilt trip them, to shame them, to make them feel bad, to yell at them, to ignore them, to reject them. And yet I can tell you that one of the powerful factors that can help other people to make changes, to move from contemplation to preparation, is compassion, acceptance, being non-judgmental. Because that's when you help the other person to realize that he or she is a good person, that he or she can do this, can make the changes. Whereas if you are very judgmental, you make the other person feel guilty, the feeling is, I'm a bad person. What's the point of making these changes? They feel worthless. They lack the confidence to make the change. That's why in group therapy, you know, when other clients sort of confront the client about their behaviors, they really shame the person with addiction. They say, you know, if you don't do this, I'm going to cut you out of my life. They think that's tough love. And yet often it doesn't help the person to make the change. There are ways that you can set boundaries. There are ways that you can disagree with the behaviors. But to completely reject the person for who he or she is, often that person would be stuck in feeling ashamed that they're not motivated to make the change. So acceptance, compassion, forgiveness, being non-judgmental are things that can help a person to make change. And likewise, for the person with the problem behavior, self-acceptance, self-compassion, self-forgiveness are those things that can help the person to make the change. Also, like in the pre-contemplation stage, ask open-ended questions. What do you think it's like to be free of this problem behavior? What might be some of the things that can help you make the change? What are some of the reasons why you might want to change this behavior? How confident are you about making this change? And if you're not confident, what can help you to feel confident about making this change? So again, those open-ended questions will encourage the person to make the change. Also to validate that they having a tough time to make the change. I see that you're really struggling to make the change. I see that you're seeing that it's a problem that you are struggling, but you really having a hard time to make the change. What do you think can help you move forward? What do you think can help you quit drinking? Another thing again is to share your experience using I statements. When I see you being aware that what is happening is a problem and you're considering change, I feel very happy. I feel very excited for you. And I know you can do it. So communicating to the other person that you have faith in her, that she can make this change, that you believe in Him that He can make this change. That can be very powerful. Let me tell you a story. When I first came to Canada, I had a very limited vision about what blind people can do. I always had this vision that wherever I go, you know, I would be guided by my family. And so during my, I think, second day in Canada, the lady who sponsored me, she said to me, you know, Quinn, one day you can just snap your finger and say, Mom, bye, see you later. And you can go out there, go to school, go to work. You can be independent. And even though at the time I had limited English, so I had a hard time understanding her. But I remember this vivid memory that she painted a vision, a picture in me that I didn't have before, that it's possible for me to be independent, that it's possible for me to go out there, to go to school, to go out like other people, right? So communicating your belief in someone or letting them know what might it be like for that person to make the change can be very inspiring. Again, the more you see something is a problem, the more the other person doesn't. Another thing that can be helpful is to show some inspiring talks by someone to that person. So rather than lecturing, rather than say, see what this person can do, just say, I just saw this talk and I it made me think of you. So I just wanted to share with you and let me know what you think. Again, right? Asking open-ended question. What are your thoughts about it? What are your feelings about it? How can you apply that to your situation? Rather than, you know, this is what that person does. Maybe you can do it too. This is what this person did. Maybe you can do it too. So often parents or spouse would come up with solutions. Maybe you can do this. Maybe you can do that, right? And again, the more you come up with solutions, the more the other person is not motivated to change. Another concept about motivation is this idea of intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. So intrinsic motivation is someone is motivated to make the change for himself because he wants to do it. Extrinsic motivation is he's motivated to change because somebody else wants it. Somebody. And so changes that are made based on extrinsic motivation can be short term and can also lead to resentment. Like say, for example, a child chooses a career based on what his parent, father, mother thinks that he should choose. Eventually can feel resentful, can even feel depressed, unfulfilled. Whereas if the person chooses the career based on what he or she is passionate about or interested in, then that's internal motivation. And so the more you come up with solutions for someone to change, those solutions or that source of change becomes a source of extrinsic motivation. He sees that he's making the change because of you, not because of him. So asking open-ended questions can be ways to instill internal motivation in that person. And those changes are much more long-lasting. So the next stage is preparation. When you prepare to make the change, one of the things that really would be really helpful is to acknowledge small successes, to acknowledge the importance of baby steps. Also, another thing that would be helpful is to really visualize what it's like to make the change. Also, another thing is to ask yourself, what might be some potential setbacks? And then visualize how you might be able to overcome those setbacks. Or writing down a list of things that you need to do. Ask yourself again, why am I making these changes? So preparation. For a family member who wants to motivate the other person to make the change, again, use validation. Wow, I see that you really want to make this change. I'm very happy for you. And again, in this preparation stage, it is very important for family members and loved ones not to jump in and do everything for the other person, because that can make them go back to contemplation stage. So for example, a spouse might say, "You're right, you know, I know that you've been telling me to go to counseling, so I'm thinking it might be a good idea." So the thing not to do is, often a spouse will say, "Okay, yeah, that's good. So what can I do for you? Can I make the appointment for you? How about call this lady? You know, the card that I give you, that might be a good number to call. Or I've heard from my friend that this counselor is really good." So again, taking over is often not helpful. So some of the things that might be helpful is, again, step back and say, "Oh, so you're considering the making the change. What do you think you need to do? What do you think is the first step? What is the next step for you? What can help you make that step?" Right? And so when the person who wants to make the change communicates some fears, some doubts, just validate that. "Yeah, I see that you really want to make the change, but you're afraid to do so. What might help you to deal with those fears?" Kind of to not be so emotionally invested, that this is up to the other person to make the change. And the more excited you are, the more you can be excited in terms of seeing that the person to want to make the change, right? But if you're very excited about taking actions for that person, so when you take actions, the person who should make the change would regress back to the previous stage, and that's the contemplation stage. So just stay calm and be encouraging and supportive. "I'm very proud of you for thinking of making this change. I'm very proud to see that you are considering to make the change, and I can't wait to see what that might be like for you." So for the person who considers the change, remember to make a list of what you might need to do, to remind yourself of doing what you know at this point, to access resources. So in internal resource, what might help me? What might be some coping skills to access external resources? Who can help me? Who can I call? Who can I talk to? Where else can I get the information, right? So gather information, thinking about who can help you, and thinking about what might be the first few steps, and embrace that feeling of excitement, but also acknowledge that feelings of fear, you know, fear of failure, fear that something is going wrong, and the self-doubt. So acknowledge them doesn't mean that you settle with those negative feelings. You acknowledge them, "Yeah, I realize I'm scared, and yet I know that this is very important to me to make the changes." The next stage is action stage. If you find yourself in the action stage, really give yourself lots of self-compassionate, positive talk. Because when you're first taking some steps to make the change, things don't always go smoothly. It's a lot of trials and errors. So remind yourself that this is only the beginning. You are only practicing, or things will get better, right? Because with changes, sometimes when you make the change, it gets worse first before it's better. So when you're first taking some actions towards the change, just remind yourself that this is only in the beginning, and things will not go perfectly at first, but things will get better. Also to give yourself a lot of self-compassionate talk or positive talk, such as, "Yeah, it didn't go as well as I expected, and that's okay, because I am only trying," or, "It's not perfect, but at least I'm doing it," or, "Good for me, I can't believe I did that, even though it's not perfect, but I'm doing it," or, "I know someone else would be very proud of me," or, "I'm very proud of myself." Another thing to do is to really acknowledge the small successes, to really track your progress, maybe even journal your progress, or talk to someone, share the little excitement, someone who is non-judgmental, who who believes in you, who's excited about your change, right? So share with them, hey, you know what I did today? I was able to do that today, or I was able to talk to that person today, or I was able to stop drinking today, or I was able to reduce some drinks today, right? So really celebrate the small successes and reward yourself with healthy behaviors. Because often people who struggle with addictions, often they reward themselves with drug use or with drinking. So make sure you reward yourself with healthy behaviors. Because by rewarding yourself, by acknowledging small successes, by tracking the progress, that gives you pleasure. It gives you dopamine in your brain, right? And so dopamine is the chemical that gives you the neurotransmitter that gives you a sense of pleasure, so that it motivates you to continue to make the change. In terms of family members, when you notice that your loved one is in the action stage, really give them a lot of encouragement, even small minor changes. Really acknowledge that, wow, I really see that you really try hard, and I really see you making good progress, or I noticed that you did that, or I noticed you did this, right? So acknowledge what you notice, because that can be a great source of positive reinforcement. And again, make sure, offer them, is there anything I can help you with, rather than taking over, rather than taking actions for them. Again, because the stages, they can go back and forth and back and forth. And so it's very important to do positive things to help them proceed to the next stage, right? So not taking actions for them, giving them lots of support, lots of encouragement, and stepping back and celebrate with them. Wow, you know, you really have gone a long way. So why don't we go out for dinner together? Or I'm very proud of you. Or I'm so impressed how you did that. Or I really appreciate the way you talk with the kids differently today. So really tell them what you notice. And that will really help to motivate the person. And relapse. Because sometimes what happens is, you know, we get excited, we make the changes, but we can go back to previous state of the behavior. For example, you know, when I first get a guide dog, they would teach us all kinds of good behaviors, good habits to have with a new dog, right? So we go home, we're inspired, and then eventually we slip back to old habits, like not being consistent with the dog, perhaps, or not walking with the dog as often, perhaps, or not correcting certain unhealthy behaviors. When you find yourself in the relapse stage, either revisit the information that helps you to make the changes in the first place. So if you've gone to some support groups, revisit certain materials, right? Or reread certain books that helps you make the changes. Or talk with the people who helped you make the changes in the first place and come up with strategies to help you go back and take preparation and action again to go back to those stages. So revisit certain information, talk to those the old people again, or remind yourself, so in the past, what helped me to move from preparation and then action stages? So remind yourself, and also remind yourself what it was like when you made the changes in the past, because often we forget that. Either revisit the information, talk to the people, or remind yourself of the strategies that helped you, remind yourself of what it was like for you then. Also ask yourself, so what have been some of the problems you notice? The thing with relapse is that it can be gradual, right? It can be a slippery slope. And so, you know, there's a saying, so a frog, if you put the frog in a pot of boiling water, the frog would jump, or the frog will react, or the frog would die right away. Worse, right? But if you put the frog in a pot and then you slowly boil the water, the frog will eventually die, but it will not react to the water, because we come to adapt negatively or positively, right? And a lot of time it's negatively. We come to adapt, and so we don't see certain behaviors are problems. It might be asking yourself, being honest again, the way things are right now, do they represent a lot of problems in my life? Or am I fooling myself, convincing myself that it's not a problem, right? Or what are some of the fears? Because you might come up with things like, well, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be, so it's hard for me to make the change. I don't have the skills that I used to have. I lose certain abilities emotionally and physically, right? So you might, again, convince yourself that you cannot make the changes. So talk to the people who overcome those setbacks. Talk to them. Learn their strategies. Listen to inspiring talks, even, to learn how people have gone through the journey, how people kind of become motivated. And really tell yourself that, I deserve to feel happy. I deserve to feel fulfilled. I deserve to have a wonderful life, to have a life that I am excited to wake up every day. So those are the six stages: pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, and relapse. And I find that often those stages, things that can make the person stuck in one stage are negative feelings such as self-doubts, fears, anger, shame, guilt, and things that can help them make positive changes are positive feelings such as hope, belief in oneself, joy, feeling accepted, having self-compassion, self-love, and feeling fulfilled, feeling hopeful, optimistic. So the same, if you are hoping for your loved ones to make change, the things that you do that can bring about negative feelings for them can get them stuck in those stages, such as things that you do that make them feel guilty, that make them feel ashamed, rejected, judged, make them feel frustrated. Often that doesn't help to change. But things that help them feel encouraged, accepted, loved, compassionate, they feel encouraged, they feel supported. Those are the feelings that can help your loved ones make the change. And now I want to share with you a TED talk called Freedom from Self-Doubt by BJ Davis. In this talk, he talked about how he was able to make very important changes in his life, well, transformational changes in his life, mostly because of the support and the faith, the confidence that other people had in him, but more importantly, his commitment to make the changes and his commitment to let go of the self-doubt that he had about himself, towards himself. Because you find that when we commit to making the changes, we often run into barriers. But the barriers are not actually the true barriers in society, in our lives. But the barriers, the biggest barriers that we often have to overcome, are the barriers that we impose on ourselves, we impose in our mind. So here is BJ Davis.
I work as a co-director at a substance abuse and co-occurring mental illness treatment agency. And not a day goes by that I take that for granted. In 1999, I paroled from prison for the second time. Apparently, once wasn't enough for me. Yeah, it's pretty scary. That's me. All told, I spent over 8 years in prison, on probation or on parole for numerous felony drug charges. For 10 years, I woke up smoking crack every morning and went to bed smoking crack every night. I spent most of my time trying to escape the helpless, hopeless reality of my life by getting high. On the worst day, I remember selling an $8,000 car that my mom had given me that I loved to my crack dealer for four $20 rocks. That memory is so painful that actually this is the first time I've ever shared it publicly. I came as close to giving up on life as one can without jumping off. But something extraordinary happened to me the second time I went to prison. About 2 months into my sentence, I got a letter from my ex-wife telling me that my mother, the person I profess to love and care about more than anyone in the world, had had a heart attack and was likely going to die. This wasn't my biological mother who had abandoned me shortly after I was born, but the real mother who had raised me as her own for all of my life. I was forced to look at what kind of person I had become. And the person I had become was not easy to look at, because I had become the son who would not be there to comfort his 77-year-old mother, laying all alone in a stark hospital room when she needed him the most, because of my selfish need to escape my realities by getting high. In a moment of brutal honesty, I had to admit I had been living a lie. I was not the loving son or the faithful partner or the supportive father or the good citizen that I had been telling everyone, including myself, for years. It was then that I decided that I needed to try to change my life into something that I and my mother, wherever she might be, could be proud of. And a tiny seed of change was planted deep inside me. So after my release from prison, I decided I would go back to school, because I figured, what better place can a middle-aged, 240-pound black ex-convict go to blend in than a white bread community college with a whole bunch of 20-something co-eds? But I was fortunate. I was fortunate because at the local junior college where I landed, I ran into two instructors that changed my life. It was my interactions with these instructors that helped me to regain the self-worth and purpose and meaning and confidence that my drug use and drug-related lifestyle had stolen from me. I'll never forget the moment that I realized that I understood that I could create my own miracle. It all started when I went up to one of Professor Senna's office hours, fishing for some special praise, because that had become my new drug of choice. She listened to me describe some super cool thing I had just done, and with no pomp and circumstance, she looked at me and said, "Isn't it amazing, BJ, what a person can do when they start believing in themselves?" And then, as if nothing special had happened, she turned back to her desk and what she was doing. Well, I walked away from that office hour dazed and confused and wondering what had happened. I was also a little pissed because she hadn't fed my new habit. But I was forced to think about what had happened and what did it mean. And importantly, that seed of change that was deep inside me started to stir. A couple months later, while taking a test, Professor Miller walked by my desk and dropped off an application that I later discovered was to the Masters of Counseling program at Sacramento State University. So after the test, I hurried up to his office hour and run into his office and held up the application and very obtusely said, "What's this?" And without hesitation, he responded, "I'm quite confident in your ability to read, so I'm sure you can figure that out on your own." So I brilliantly followed that up with an equally obtuse question. I said, "So do you think I can do this?" And with patience, but no special fanfare, he looked at me and said, "Of course. Of course." And then he too turned back around to his desk, signaling that we were done. And again, I stumbled away from an office hour, dazed and confused. But this time, the seeds of believing in myself that had been planted in my garden of self-doubt took root and started to grow. In a moment, I realized that the only person left to believe in me that needed to believe in me was me. As my tears started to well up in my eyes, for the first time since I had left prison, I felt free. After 3 years, I finally felt free of the mental and emotional shackles caused by the shame and the pain and the despair of my years of drug use. For years, I and people like me had been told, once an addict, always an addict. Once a criminal, always a criminal. Once a loser, always a loser. But I realized that was only true if you believed it. I have learned the hard way how paralyzing self-doubt can be. It contributes to people choosing misery over joy and emptiness over fulfillment and imprisonment over freedom, and unnecessarily so. In 2006, only 7 years after I walked off the yard, it's Corcoran State Prison, I walked across a stage and I was conferred my doctorate in clinical psychology. And sitting in the middle of the third row was a woman who had spent countless sleepless nights worrying about her son. That woman was my then 85-year-old mother. who did not die while I was in prison. But lived to see me become the man she always believed I could be. Prior to 1999, this was my life, without hope or purpose. Today, this is my life. Now, I want to say here that I'm often frustrated when I hear people attribute a person's successful recovery or rehabilitation to a miracle, as if their hard work and perseverance had nothing to do with it. I needed to say that because it was regaining my belief in myself that gave me the power to change the direction of my life, and is what allows me to now provide hope to others facing similar challenges. Because I'm living proof. I'm living proof that a person's past does not have to define their future. Now, you don't have to go to prison to learn the lessons I have. In fact, I really wouldn't recommend it. But know this. We do have a choice whether we want to have our past define us or refine us. And as I tell the thousands of individuals struggling with addictions and other painful life challenges that come through our clinic, you don't have to wait for a miracle. You can create your own. Thank you.
This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour, hosted by Quinlay Erickson, every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. For more information about Quinn, visit www.quinle.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and you have a beautiful, restful sleep. Good night.